This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Fire up the DeLorean. We're going back in time. The history of WWE.com proudly presents the History of Wrestling podcast right here on Place to Be Nation.
Welcome, everybody, to the second installment of the History of Wrestling podcast right here on the Place to Be Nation. I'm Graham Coffin, joined you this week with Brad Studs. Brad, how you doing?
Wonderful. Excited to be here. Excited for all the feedback we've received on episode one. And thank you guys for sticking with us on another endeavor of the History of Wrestling crew here.
And it's been a big couple days. We had the Rumble, had Raw. We've got Dan, who's buried under, I think he's in Hoth right now. That's a Star Wars reference for all the nerds that are too cool to like Star Wars.
I am, guys. It is at least 30 inches outside my door right now.
So are you able to actually go outside? Can you open your door?
I can open my door. You have to step over a little bit of excess snow on your way out. You just fall immediately into about a huge, extremely big pile of snow. Apparently, this condominium complex does not believe in plowing all day.
I believe in plowing all day.
So, you know, the pup and I have been kind of sequestered in our little hole here, the palatial one-bedroom palace here in Marlborough, Massachusetts. We're, you know, going to try our best to put a good show together.
And how is the dog this week?
He is fine. He doesn't like the snow as much as everybody else up here, but I've hit
what
all...
What is the dog's name?
The dog's name is Basil.
Basil going to interrupt the show this week?
Well, I have him really close by, with my hand over his mouth, so perhaps we'll be okay.
Are you trying to suffocate your dog?
You know, self-muzzling. But you know what? I hit all my shoes, so I don't think he'll be able to tack any shoes over the course of this episode.
Look, all right. Well,
he can be our mascot. We can make anything work. If Basil wants to be on the show, he can be on the show.
Hey, there could be a week in which you can't produce and he could produce.
There you go.
I've taught him everything I know, and he wanted to teach me how to lick my own ass, but I didn't take him up on that offer.
Did you already know?
No comment.
Never know till you try it. Graham, what are we talking about this week?
This week, and obviously this is what everyone's talking about, we're going to take a little different spin on it. We're just a couple days away from, or removed from, the Royal Rumble, and it was a big talker Rumble. Regardless of what the outcome was, it was a big talker, just like last year's was a big talker. And so, first of all, it was a unique opportunity for me this weekend to go to Burlington, North Carolina, stay at the Brad Stutz condo, and actually watch a pay-per-view with people. I have not watched a pay-per-view with people in probably close to 10 years. I'm always the guy – well, first of all, I'm like doing results for the website and everything, but over the past couple of years I've also been doing the live tweeting. And this was the first time in so long that I got to just, you know, put the laptop away, sit there, enjoy it, pop with everybody else, grumble with everybody else, and just kind of be part of, you know, just enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah, for me personally, I really like the experience of watching a show with people. It has its benefits and its negatives that I'm going to touch on in a little bit. But yeah, I didn't realize until this weekend that you typically, you know, watched them solo and were, you know, kind of studiously jotting down your notes for the website and everything as they were taking place. Dan, how do you like to watch your pay-per-views when you get a choice? I know this one was a little bit different experience that we'll get into in a minute, but if you're just watching at home, are you by yourself or are you with people typically?
Generally, I at least pull the offer out to any wrestling friends in the area. Hey, I'm putting it on. It's a lot easier now with the network to just say, hey, just drop by my house. I'll probably have it on. And sometimes you get people to come in and that sort of thing.
Are they homeless people? Like, yeah. They just wander in? They'll, like, give
vagabonds.
Me some
sandwich.
I just hold a sandwich board outside my apartment. Hey, free wrestling. But but in all seriousness, recently I've been able to, because of my relationship with the guys over at Place to Be Nation, there's a place down in West Warwick called Boneheads. It's a wing bar, and they put on a lot of shows. So every month, every couple months or so, we'll all get together and make a little, like, gathering, a day of it, you know, sitting there watching the pay-per-view, eating wings, getting fatter. And it's really cool, the camaraderie, particularly when you're amongst other wrestling fans.
Yeah, I agree. I like the camaraderie. Graham, what was your experience like, first time in a decade?
You know exactly
or so?
What it was like. God damn it.
I do, but they don't. Hopefully we're not just doing this for ourselves here.
It was fun, and I really enjoyed everything, and I enjoyed watching it with people in the business, even if it's on the independent circuit. These are people that are knowledgeable about why things are done or why things aren't done, and they can appreciate the nuances that maybe the average viewer wouldn't. So I thought that was really cool. Watching the Rumble itself, watching the show, you know, I had a blast watching the title match, because at one point we were all – it was almost like the wave of, oh, just throughout the room as Brock Lesnar would resurrect himself and start throwing people around when we all thought he was dead. But then, you know, that all kind of came to a halt probably about a quarter of the way through the Rumble match, and I got really quiet, and I remained really quiet. And I think at probably about 11:30 or midnight, I'm laying on the couch, and I remember you saying, Graham, how you doing back there, buddy? I'm going, nope, I don't want to talk about it. So that was that was how Sunday night ended.
Well, I think that's definitely our topic for today. I think that's definitely the point of view and the kind of the slant that we want to put on everything today is kind of, for lack of a better term, the historical context of Sunday night's Rumble. And, you know, have we changed as viewers? Has the fan base changed over the years? Because this is the second year in a row now that this particular event has yielded just a massive public outcry. Some people this year, even threatening a boycott. Why do you think that is? What is it specific to the Royal Rumble that gets these passionate response from these people, so much so that they're threatening to cancel their WWE Network subscriptions, and so much so that they're threatening to you know, hijack WrestleMania last year if their guy wasn't in the match. To either one of you, what is it about this particular event that, I guess for lack of a better term, gets people's hopes up?
Dan, I don't want to talk over you. Did you want to go first?
Yeah, I had a quick thought about this. I mean, I was actually at the Rumble that we were talking about before this, you know, just a few days ago when we were recording this. That, and there really was that kind of, for lack of a better term, deflation when somebody in particular was eliminated from this Rumble. It was amazing.
That Fandango.
Yeah, with Fandango, who looked a lot like he stole Steve Blackman's pants that night or something. I don't know.
Somebody we were watching with said that same thing. He looked up and thought it was Blackman.
Oh man, I think it would have been cooler if it was Steve Blackman, to be honest. But that's
would have killed half the roster.
That's another show altogether. But yeah, there certainly was a level of. I mean, even when you noticed, when you rewatch, maybe some of the countdown cheers were really, really lackluster. I mean, when Daniel Bryan first entered the ring and he was kicking and everybody was doing the yes chants, even on the countdown you would see people doing kind of the movement of the yes chant with their hands, their arms raised, and it was just a completely different atmosphere by the time you got to the end. But that wasn't the point of your question. The thing that I was getting at is you really did have that kind of deflating moment where you were just like, I don't know what I should be even cheering for anymore. I'm even cheering for bad guys. And it comes back to the point that we've been branded with the Royal Rumble for years now, that this is the launching pad for the road to WrestleMania. And when in everybody, when they start to think about the road to WrestleMania, I think I said on another show that this is the holiday season of professional wrestling. This is the kickoff, really. And when something like and when things don't match our lofty expectations, like Daniel Bryan winning the Rumble and it would tell a great story about his comeback, and then he's going to come back and win the title back at WrestleMania, when that falls flat, man, that really is one of those experiences where it's like almost getting a bad gift or you didn't get the thing that you were really hoping for Christmas. It's just one of those things where you're not an irrational person all year round, but then when you get to the holidays, all of a sudden you start to become like the biggest ungrateful son of a bitch out there. And I think that's what happens when you watch the Royal Rumble these days.
I think that if you were to go back and watch those earlier Rumbles, the expectations aren't there yet. The expectations are still being kind of conceived. And back then, it was so new and refreshing, just the fact that all these guys are in the ring together and you don't know what the pairings are going to be and you don't know who's going to be in the ring at the same time. Whereas now, you know, you can argue that the product is so oversaturated that those special moments aren't so much a draw anymore. I think the special moment is seeing the guy at the end win. It's not so much, you know, Demolition Axe and Demolition Smash being in the ring together at the same time, because for some reason or another, we've probably seen those kind of weird matchups on a random Raw or random SmackDown at this point, because we just give these matches away all the time with, you know, very little buildup on the typical basis. And I think for so many fans, we have seen it, you know, for us longtime fans, we are so embedded in this business without actually being wrestlers that we've kind of seen it all to some degree. And so we put together in our heads this grand plan that would just make a bazillion dollars. And when that grand plan does not come to fruition, it's just, you know, why am I investing my time in this?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that. And I think, you know, for me personally, when I think about those magical Rumble moments, and I'll probably end up talking about this a little bit later on, the one that I always think of is Hogan and the Warrior at 90. When the two guys just kind of crossing paths, and you feel that moment, and the whole building feels that moment, and everyone watching it feels that moment. And Graham, I think that's a great point, because it's almost impossible to have that moment now, you know, with all these hours of TV every week. If they had that back in 1989, Hogan and Warrior surely would have crossed paths, in a promo or a tag match, or you know, they might would have just thrown that match out there on a random Raw to spike a number against a football game, you know. The landscape has changed drastically, and I think that has something to do with it. But do you think the expectations of the fans has changed a lot too? You talked about, you know, the concept being new, and it's been kind of worn now. People know what they expect, and then when they don't kind of get a grandiose match long story, I think that kind of hurts the crowd's participation in things. I think even once Brian went out, if there had been a great story being told and not just a lot of filler people afterwards, I don't think it would have been as bad. Agree or disagree?
I agree. And I think that well, I don't know what I think.
Well, I just, you know, Dan talked about the energy leaving the room live in the arena, and it was palpable through the screen. You could feel the energy of the whole event leave, and that's kind of one of the things that I kept going back to. There's two big points I want to make, and that's one of them. It's Brian goes out, and then I don't have the list right in front of me, but we get Fandango, and we get Titus O'Neil and Swagger, and a lot of guys kind of coming into the ring that aren't particularly over, good hands, but guys that are not exactly setting the world on fire from a popularity standpoint. You know, if there was a bigger picture, if there was a bigger story being told, Dan, do you think the backlash for Brian's elimination would have been the same, or do you think if, let's just say, maybe Dolph had been number four or five and they had put some obstacles ahead of him, if the match had been structured differently, even Bray Wyatt, if the match had been structured differently where there was a bigger story unfolding and it wasn't just Brian's out and then here comes New Day and then here comes Titus O'Neil and here comes these guys, if there had been a bigger story unfolding, do you think the crowd would have stayed with it?
I think initially people were still going to be bummed out about Daniel Bryan regardless. I think where they had their biggest error was they kind of bunched up the Dean Ambroses, the Dolph Ziggler's of the world, the guys that maybe could have softened that blow. They had them go until the very end. And then they, you know, that's another deflating moment altogether, is seeing those guys just get systematically destroyed by guys that shouldn't even be on the roster right now. That's a different story altogether. But I think if you spread it out a little bit and booked it so that Dolph came in at 15 almost immediately after Brian was eliminated, then maybe that would have softened the blow a little bit. I mean, the live crowd was crazy for Dean Ambrose. I mean, even when he was just doing an interview or when they showed his face on, like, the opening montage and that sort of thing, it was like much different decibel level when Ambrose was on. And you heard the boos for Roman Reigns all the way through. I think if Ambrose came in at, like, you know, 16, 17, I think Reigns came in at 19. I think if you basically flip-flopped Reigns and Ambrose, things might have been a little bit different. It might not have been nearly as obvious, the disappointment from the fans throughout after Brian got eliminated. And then, you know, see where it falls from there. Maybe even call an audible. But it looked like from the get-go that this was Roman Reigns' to lose, and that's what they ended up sticking to it despite what the fan reaction was.
And sorry earlier, my thought was getting away from me, but I really think that this Rumble and last Rumble kind of paints the picture of the fans are saying, we like these guys, and the company is saying, no, we want, you're supposed to like this guy.
Yeah.
And that's when the fans kind of get, well, I don't know if I want to like anything.
Yeah, you know, not to try to answer my own question, but I think, you know, when I posed the question earlier about why is it this event that seems to draw such vigor, Graham, do you think it has something to do with, like Dan said, this is the start to the road to WrestleMania? Do you think it has something to do with the fact that the Royal Rumble itself inherently seems tailor-made and custom-made to launch someone And so people pick their guy that they want to launch. And if it's not in line with who the company is looking to launch, 2 years in a row now, we've seen that happen. Do you think that's kind of what it is that's unique about the Rumble?
Right, and that's kind of what I just touched on. The fans take to these certain guys, and then the company, more or less on a grand stage, ignores them. And you know, the company line has been used so often. We listen to the fans, and you know, they're the real boss. But then something like that, at what we saw at the Rumble, happens, and something like what happened last year at the Rumble happens. And it's just so obvious from the live crowd, not only the live crowd, but obviously the folks watching at home as well, that they just at that moment rejected it. Now, how that changes over time, we'll have to wait and see. I really thought, and just going off my own personal thoughts going into the Rumble, that this was very much a mirror image of what we had back in 95, 96, where the entire company orchestrated the whole, is Sean going to retire? He's out hurt. He's, you know, will he ever be able to get back in the ring? He gets back in the ring, wins the Rumble, goes on to Mania, wins the title. But in this case with Brian, it was not orchestrated. We, you know, legit, he may not be able to get back in the ring. He is able to get back in the ring. He is in the Rumble. He never lost the title. For me personally, I think he and Brock Lesnar would be an amazing story, and that's not what was in the cards. And I think to some degree, they kind of went too far with Brian with his fake retirement speech to kind of lay the seed that he would win.
Yeah, I think that point in particular is inarguable. For anyone that is tremendously upset that Brian didn't win, or even more so, if you're tremendously upset in the way in which Brian was eliminated, that's the point that nobody can argue. Is it seems baffling to devote such a TV buildup to the most popular guy in the company if the end game, if the outplan for this is to have him play such a limited role in the match itself. I don't understand that at all, personally. You talked about what was in the cards, Graham, and Dan mentioned, you know, maybe even call an audible. And I don't know. I feel like with the WWE infrastructure, that's incredibly hard to do. And I feel like, you know, you kind of paint yourself into a corner in these situations in some instances. And I personally, with no intimate knowledge of anything, feel like they've done it twice now, where in, I don't know, September, October, November, whenever, it seemed like a good idea that, hey, Batista will come back, he'll win the Rumble, he'll win the belt, he's got the movie coming out that's going to be huge, blah, 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 this is going to be a good thing. And, you know, I don't know when the deal was made with Rock. I have, you know, no inside knowledge of that, whatever. I'm just a guy with a podcast. But, you know, let's just say, hypothetically, this deal with Rock was made in, I don't know, October. Because it would stand to reason that you have to schedule something with Rock, you know, pretty far out. You know, hey, we're gonna have Roman win the Rumble this year. We're going to strap the Rocket to him. How about you come down? We'll do a little thing. Give him your endorsement. Y'all are cousins, blah, blah, blah. You know, if you've set this deal up with someone like Rock, you can't just call an audible. You can't just, even if the TV build is saying, you know, I don't know if Roman's ready or not. You know, what do you do in that situation, Graham?
Well, I think he's going to be a big star in that company regardless of what happens at the Rumble and regardless of what happens at WrestleMania. If he's not the top guy next week, he's going to be the top guy 6 months from now. So a Rock endorsement is just as good, whether he, you know, has a singles match or you know, beats Rusev in a singles match or is in the Rumble match. I think it works either way.
Okay.
Actually, it would have worked great for a singles match because Rock already has a little thing with Rusev.
Sure. Dan, I personally, and like we said earlier, you know, me and Graham and a group watched the show together, and I myself and some of the other guys that we were with didn't necessarily think Bryan was going to win. Even if you take Roman out of the equation, it seemed logical to us that, you know, you would use the Rumble to set up a Mania program for Bryan, which that ended up not happening either. It's pretty obvious, it's pretty clear who the crowd wanted to win, and their displeasure was very vocally voiced. Did you get the feeling, maybe being in the building that evening, or even before bell time, or just from talking to people, did it seem like people really thought Bryan would win, or was he more just like the sentimental favorite?
I think it was a little bit of both. I think a lot of people wanted to see them correct themselves from the last year, where many people felt that Bryan was the deserving winner of the Rumble. They should have put him in. That's what they all expected. That was like our big present last year. Well, yeah, he lost to Bray Wyatt earlier, but now he's just going to come back and win the Rumble and go on to WrestleMania, even though he's coming off of a loss. And, you know, the Authority can't keep him from winning, that sort of thing. And then it didn't happen. So now this year it was kind of like, well, he's back and he's overcome this neck injury and all these setbacks, and he was 8 months on the shelf, and now he's available, and he's made this big announcement that he's returning. And not only that he's returning, but he's returning to the Royal Rumble. They even made a build-up a week before where he had to beat Kane, or else he wouldn't even be in the Rumble anymore. You know, so that kind of like, you know, kind of stirred the pot a little bit, that like, well, why are they going through these great lengths to keep him out of the Rumble if he's not going to eventually come up and win it? And the first warning sign for me was he came in at number 10. Not traditionally the place where you would win the Royal Rumble, but certainly if you're coming off of neck surgery, but you still want to have one of those kind of miracle runs through the Rumble where you have the longevity and you come out of nowhere to win the thing. You're not one of these guys who comes in at 28, throws out three guys, and then you're done. Maybe you can make the argument that that was a spot for him, but he was dumped pretty quickly. I think he was out after only about 10 minutes. Now, unless it was like injury related or they're trying to build up another storyline, as you were saying, it was very puzzling at the time. So if you look at who he kind of encountered in the Rumble itself, it looked like it was back to Bray or maybe something with Rusev. But other than that, I mean, he really just, the guys he chucked were guys you would expect him to chuck. So, yeah, there definitely was a feeling that he was one of the favorites. And certainly it was one of those, well, he's an alternative to Roman Reigns, if nothing else. If they don't feel like Roman Reigns is ready, at least you have a ready-made guy in Bryan at the top of the card who can run with the ball and the fans will be behind it.
Yeah, it certainly... it certainly seems that way, and I think that's a perfectly logical way for someone to feel. It definitely does kind of seem like they got our hopes up for Bryan, and as it turns out, pretty needlessly. Who else live in the venue, Dan, felt like and seemed like and were reacted to like the stars of the show in the Rumble match, or even in the earlier other matches on the card?
Well, Brock Lesnar is the biggest name out there. I'm now starting, at first I was kind of like, well, you know what, Brock, he's collected his money, now he wants to go off into the sunset. Maybe he could lose here and still get a good WrestleMania payday and then go away, and then he could bring up somebody in the process on his way out the door. Now, after listening to the crowd reaction and everything, it's going to be really, really difficult for Triple H or Vince or whomever to sit there and let this guy walk away just based on the fan reaction. And I mean, he is an attraction. I mean, people, I don't know how many more people gathered around to watch this than as opposed to TLC, but you have to imagine, A, with the Rumble, and B, knowing that Brock Lesnar was definitely on the card, certainly added a dimension of must-see-ness, if you will, to this event. When you're at the show, the actual Rumble itself, I mean, Dean Ambrose was huge. You know, people would have been absolutely fine, I think. If Bryan gets dumped and Dean Ambrose ended up winning, I think people would have been, yeah, maybe a little disappointed, but they would have been okay with it. Same goes for Dolph, although Dolph was just really, like, in and out. He was just, you know, a spark, and then got punched out, and then that was the end of that. One guy that I think really impressed me, and it kind of was a little disappointing to see him unceremoniously dumped towards the end, was Bray Wyatt. I mean, Bray Wyatt is a guy that you don't really know. Jim Ross thinks he's a character babyface. They want him to be a heel and an evil one at that. And he had probably the most eliminations. He had the most time in there. He had some really good spots. He's the one who eventually knocked out, I think it was him who dropped Bryan. So there's big news right there. And he looked like he mattered again, which he hadn't in a while, even in that kind of feud with Dean Ambrose. I mean, it just sort of was like, okay, cool, these guys are just fighting again. But it just seemed like he was a big deal again, and like everybody else at the end of the Rumble, they just sort of got dumped unceremoniously by the Authority, and there's really not much you can say after that.
Yeah, that is really a recurring theme, I think, in this conversation, is treating someone like they matter and positioning them like they matter, as opposed to just treating them like an afterthought. And I think you can make the argument that no one really was ultimately positioned like they matter, other than, you know, Big Show, Kane, Roman, and maybe Bray Wyatt, maybe Dean Ambrose. Who was the bigger waste, Brian or Dolph?
Who are you asking?
Either one.
I mean, it's really either or, because Dolph, you're coming off that great ladder match at TLC. You're coming off that fantastic Survivor Series, and now he's kind of back where he was before Survivor Series. And then Brian is just another guy who's more popular than some of the other guys.
Yeah, I'm looking. I pulled up the stats here. Brian ended up with 10 minutes, 11 seconds in the match. Ziggler was in it for 2:19 total. So that kind of gives us an idea of. I don't know, their perceived worth, I guess.
I mean, you could go look back at like an early Rumble and the guys who are in there for 2:19. That'd be like Saba Simba.
Yeah, absolutely. Or Coco Beware or whatever. And I don't know, maybe that's one of the reasons why things are so disappointing now, is it seems like there's so many talented guys that are afterthoughts, that are not a key part of things. We will touch on some of the classic Rumbles of the past and maybe how things were done back then, how things are done now, and maybe why we like those better, why we're more nostalgic for those after.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials one and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcasts? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant.
Sorry.
The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show at Breakdown Matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week, join Marcus Vandenberg and myself for the world's most dangerous sports show and the program that's changing the game one show at a time, the Kings of Sport Podcast. Available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the big four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island, and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective. And we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
Welcome back. We hope that you will check out and support all of those great shows that are a part of the Place to Be Nation. Dan, you know, you were kind of talking a little bit before we went to break about the feeling in the building and you know, the expectation in the building. Did you get a chance to watch the match again later on the network or even on Raw? And if so, what was your experience like viewing it on tape as opposed to being there live in the venue?
Well, I had to. I felt I really needed to just get a feel for, because there was talk and chatter among the guys and my colleagues over at PlaceToBeNation.com who, you know, said, well, you know, he might have come across as a big star in the building, but maybe not so much on TV. So I really wanted to see that for myself. So, you know, immediately during the start of this blizzard, I put it on the network, and I wanted to see for myself. And it was funny watching the Rumble again, because once again, when Bryan was eliminated, which we talked about a lot during the first segment, you had this kind of like melancholy, like, oh man, I'm sad. Where do we go from here? There's like sort of like this helplessness, like, what, you know, will our hero actually ever get what he deserves? That sort of thing. But while I was watching, I kind of rebounded a bit. Like, no, okay, we're okay. We're fine. You know, we still have lots of guys out there. Roman's in there. He's getting booed. But Dean's coming out. And Dolph's coming out. And there's some jobbers in between. But you're feeling okay. And then all of a sudden, once, like, Big Show and Kane started knocking people out and then dumping them over the top, it was like, oh, God, I'm sad again. Like, I'm just so miserable. Like, this is, like, the worst possible thing that could happen. That, like, Roman Reigns didn't stand a chance because already now the fans have been just kicked in the balls, like, twice now over the course of this show. And it was just so deflating. I keep going back to that word probably because of, I'm a Patriots fan as well, but it was just so such a tough pill to swallow watching it back. Like, oh, I was sad in the building. Now I'm sad in my living room, and there was no going back. And hopefully they do bounce back over the next couple months leading into Mania. But at the time, I just remember both in the building and then back at home, just like, why? If we're feeling this now, certainly they have a pulse on what's going on. But that's what people have been debating the last few days.
And it's really interesting that it was Kane and Big Show in that situation, because for one, those guys have been on television, on pay-per-view for 20 years now. I mean, Isaac Yankem showed up 20 years ago. The Giant showed up in WCW 20 years ago. And these are guys that over the past many years have just gone face to heel to face to heel to face to heel to main event player to opening match to main event player to opening match. That it's really hard to give them any credibility whatsoever at this point. I really think they would have been better off using, I mean, I don't really like being that guy saying, here's what I would have done differently, but if you had Rusev and Bray in those spots instead of Kane and Big Show, I think the crowd would have at least bought into it.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, I touched on earlier about the Rumble being kind of a launching pad for a new star, and the thought that's kept going through my head the past few days, nothing against any of the four guys that I'm about to mention, as I consider all four of them to be credits to the industry and everything, but to use Kane and Big Show in that way, it would be like if in, say, the 98 Rumble, getting Austin ready for WrestleMania 14, it would be like if they shit-canned Rock and shit-canned Mick Foley and used, you know, Nikolai Volkoff and King Kong Bundy for Austin to go over. Like, that's an analogy that has real weight to it. Why do you think that is, Graham? Why this clinging to guys that, like you said, have been running strong for 20 years? And that's a credit to them, but it's like Dan expressed the opinion earlier that he doesn't even think those guys should be on the active roster anymore. Why do you think the office is clinging to these veteran guys?
I think they're a little blinded by the fact that the fans don't give them any credibility at this point. I think they're good for the company. They've been good for the company. Maybe the company wants to be loyal to them right back. But is that good for business? And I don't think in this case it was.
Yeah, I also think they're just too in love with the Authority storyline. And let's face it, the Authority has, once you get past Rollins, the Authority has a really shallow bench right now as far as, like, young talent that people want to see. And, you know, I think it's like Pennywise pound foolish. They figure, well, who's the big antagonist going into this? Well, it's the Authority. We're trying to stop the guys who are against the Authority from headlining WrestleMania. Fine. Well, who's in the Authority that's in the Rumble? Well, I guess it's Kane and Big Show. Well, let's have Kane and Big Show be the ultimate heels in this event. Like, so instead of kind of looking at a guy like Bray or a guy like Rusev, and for a while those guys were kind of dominating the heel side of this Rumble, instead of them kind of carrying the torch for the heels, it was like, well, let's go back to the well. We're in this Authority storyline till the end, so let's have these guys be the ones that, you know, kind of take a dump in our front lawn, so to speak, or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of looking at it. Just like you said, to be, you know, Pennywise and pound foolish. To me, it sounds good on paper. That, hey, we're going to get Brian out. We're going to put Kane and Big Show, who we know nobody's going to cheer for, there at the end. with Roman so that people will rally behind Roman. And just in case they don't, we're going to have the guy that everybody, except for Grant Sawyer, loves to come out and do a cameo at the end. To me, it sounds like a good enough idea on paper, because I think the big problem that you run into potentially if they go with, say, Cesaro at the end, or for that matter, Bray or Rusev, is the crowd picking that guy over Roman just to be, you know, contrary, just to be whatever.
And they did.
So, yeah, they very much did. So to me, the plan on paper sounded okay. Boy, the crowd rejected it, you know, almost as vehemently as they rejected Batista the year before. Graham, going forward, how do you try to organize the Royal Rumble for next year? How do you try to prevent this from happening? If you've got your guy that you want to take to WrestleMania, how do you do better?
Well, I think one thing that we criticize them a lot for, and in this case they actually did it right. Well, they did it wrong, but they did it right, is long-term planning. They actually did make a long-term plan here. They just didn't know when to change direction. And I think they do need to listen to the fans, even though they said that they do. They didn't in this case. And that's going to affect what we're going to be watching in a couple months at WrestleMania. Our guy, chances are, is not going to be in that top spot. So, you know, for a lot of us going into this one, if it was say like a month or so ago, 6 weeks ago, our guy would be Ziggler. Then Bryan came back in the picture. Well, I don't know. Maybe they're going to go all the way with Bryan and do good for last year, and they didn't do either. And they gave us this new guy that we don't really know if we want yet. So, you know, it's an old line at this point, but listen to the crowd, and they claim to be doing that, but that's not what we saw.
Guys, where do you feel like this Rumble fits into a historical perspective? Did the bungling of Daniel Bryan ruin it, or can we look back a few years from now and say, hey, you know, this was pretty good. You know, Bubba Ray was cool, Bray Wyatt was cool. You know, I we've seen just about all of them. Where do you guys think this one will ultimately lay historically?
I might be speaking just out of emotion right now, just caught up in the moment, but right now I would kind of maybe lean towards having the Rumble match itself kind of in the bottom half right now. I mean, yeah, Bubba Ray was cool, but he, you know, wasn't in there very long, although his stuff with Truth was kind of amusing. Seeing Kofi fall into the Adam Rose Rosebuds was, you know, it was an idea that was bound to happen at some point. You know, they might be running out of ideas for Kofi at this point, but we'll see. But then you just have that sour taste in your mouth, both in the middle and at the end of the event. And I'm not really sure exactly, unless you're a diehard Roman Reigns fan, thinking, going back to this and saying, yeah, I want to watch that. Like, that's the Rumble I want to see again. So that's kind of how I judge it. You know, I mean, there might be worse Rumbles as far as like, oh, it was just punching and kicking and really not a lot of spots, or, you know, well, I didn't really like the winner of that, but at least I could appreciate his performance. I don't think this Rumble has that, to be honest.
I hope for their sake there's enough of those diehard Roman Reigns fans to fill a stadium come March, or else they might have a real problem on their hands. Graham Cawthon, the history of wrestling, where does this Rumble fit in a history, in a historical context for you?
Right now, kind of what Dan said. I think last year I have not even rewatched. After that live viewing, I have not gone back to rewatch it. It just leaves a bad taste in your mouth, and I think this one kind of did the same. Those, you know, if you go back and watch like 89, 90, 91, 92, 93, 94, 95 is a little hit or miss, 96, 97, you know, toward the late 90s they get a little iffy, but, you know, I can sit down and watch those all day long. And why is that? I think they're fun. They're fun. And Sunday, the Rumble itself, I don't think was fun.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you.
You could have some guys get eliminated and you know, guys come in and they don't get their shine and they're just, you know, fodder for somebody else. But you don't feel deflated.
Yeah, I feel like I feel the same way about those 90s Rumbles. I also, I personally think the Rumbles of between like 8 and 12 years ago hold up pretty well and are pretty fun when you've got, you know, Jericho and Guerrero and Benoit and a lot of those guys in the mix. I think those Rumbles leading up to, like leading up to 20, 21, and 22 are pretty fun and have pretty good rewatch value, and you get to see some guys like Simon Dean that you may have forgot about, and guys like Hurricane and people like that. And maybe years from now, you know, someone will look back and then be, oh, you know, when Sandow was doing the Miz thing, or, you know, or, oh, there's Rusev, you know, that was when he was getting his big push. Maybe not. Have the, you know, we talked about the expectations about of the audience. We talked about the hopes of the audience and their personal tastes. Does it seem like the match itself, the layout, the structure, the even the goal of it has changed anybody else? To me personally, it felt like more filler in this match than in any other one that I can recall in recent years. It felt like there weren't a lot of big stories going on. It really felt like there was one story at the end with the two monsters killing everybody except for Roman. And it just seemed to me like in years past you could weave a lot more stories into the match, and the whole match itself had a lot more direction. Historically speaking, Graham, do you agree with that? That there seemed to be less direction and less real structure to even the layout, even beyond the execution?
I think that, yeah. I mean, if you go back and watch one of those earlier Rumbles and then watch Sunday, it's you know, so different in the layout. There were a few things that I liked in there early. I liked the Bray Wyatt spot, which is kind of a throwback to the CM Punk spot in 2010. And really, and I think I had mentioned this to you earlier that day, you know, if you're going to have that Bray Wyatt spot, or even, I mean, you could also call it the Ric Flair spot, and then Piper comes out, or the Stone Cold Steve Austin spot, and Bret Hart comes out. You've got the big heel who's been clearing the ring, and then, you know, the big babyface comes out. And I like that they did that little throwback spot. Now, it didn't lead anywhere. We didn't get a nice payoff to it, but I did enjoy that. I mean, you can tell it's not a Pat Patterson project, and those earlier ones certainly were. And I think it was Michael Hayes who maybe did the 2008 one with Cena's comeback. So I don't know who laid out the match, or if it was one person or many people, but I mean, there's a lot of nuances that I think we're missing in the match. And you're right, the best Rumbles are ones that tell different stories throughout, and the fun ones are that way. Like, I think back to 2000 where Too Cool did their little dancing spot in the ring. I think that back to 2004, which was actually on the same date, also in Philly, where it had Benoit and Randy Orton almost went the whole distance, and then Ernest Miller and his little dancing boy came out, and Benoit and Orton tossed him. It was just like a fun, lighthearted comedic spot, but you didn't lose anything long term. And you had Mick Foley show up in 04. Like, there were so many different stories being told. And I think in this one, it was just basically, you will love Roman. You will love Roman. And the crowd was like, no, no, we're not. Don't tell us what we're going to like. We're going to tell you what we like. And if you don't listen, we're going to walk away.
Dan, why do you think people are so vocal these days? What has changed societally that has made us that way? You know, when Hogan was tossed in 89, they didn't turn on Big John Studd. So why, you know, what is it you think that's made everyone kind of in a way more opinionated now? Is it a social media thing? Is it just a cultural thing where everyone feels like they have a voice now? And, you know, if it is a social, you know, societal, cultural thing, how do you try to do wrestling now with everybody having an opinion that might be contrary to everybody else's opinion?
Well, it's certainly true. Social media has changed everything. To borrow or to paraphrase rather, a line from the sage-like Matt Stryker during Wrestle Kingdom 9, which I finally was able to watch since the last time we all spoke. It's almost like the world has gotten smaller. You know, you have access at your fingertips at all times. So, I mean, I think that's what happens, you know. As somebody sends out a tweet. I mean, heck, Wade Barrett sends out a tweet about Papa Shango, and then you have people all of a sudden thinking that Papa Shango is going to be in the Royal Rumble, and then you have people who bitch later about, oh, man, I can't believe Papa Shango wasn't in the Royal Rumble. I mean, that's how these things sort of start, you know. So, but, yeah, I think that a lot of people, like crowds, are getting a little bit more bold. They're encouraged to chant things, basically. They're encouraged to, you know, I mean, the signs were always kind of there. But, you know, you have, like, the constant, you know, participation from the audience, which wasn't a thing back in the late 80s, you know, when the Rumble idea was just getting started. You didn't have, like, the internet writers talking about, well, you know, I mean, this guy Daniel Bryan, he's a star of the future. And then you have someone read that and say, yeah, this Daniel Bryan, he should really be in the main event at WrestleMania. I was told he's a star of the future. And then next thing you know, if he loses, oh, well, what the heck? I mean, I thought he was going to be a star of the future. Why are they holding him down? Now, all of a sudden, you ever notice, guys, I've always wanted to ask this to guys, you know, colleagues, is did ever occur to you back in, like, 89 to use terms like put over and heel heat and all these different kind of insider terms that are now becoming kind of like part of the lexicon of a wrestling viewer? Like, it was so baffling to when I first started to really watch again in 2011. Like, these terms were used quite frequently by just laymen, not just the insiders.
Yeah, I think about that often, honestly, and particularly when we talk about putting a show into a historical perspective, I especially think about stuff like that. You know, we romanticize those Rumbles from the late 80s and the early 90s, but people's perspectives have changed. People look at stuff like that now, and people are more, in a way, people are less involved with less engaged with the product, but in a way, they're more involved with the product. So, Graham, same question to you. Like, how do you combat that? How do you listen to the audience when the audience seems to have so many different voices? You go to Iowa, they may not see Cesaro as anything special. You go to Philadelphia, and, you know, he's got a history in that town, and those fans are a little more educated, and their tastes a little bit more nurtured, and they go crazy for him. How do you book wrestling in this modern era where everyone's got an opinion and everyone is engaged on Twitter and on Facebook and everywhere else?
Thankfully, I don't have to know the answer to that because I don't work for WWE.
True.
But that is a hard one to answer. I think that, you know, the Rumble is so interesting in that, you know, when it started off, it was just a match. It was an attraction, and you put all of these people in the ring that aren't usually in the ring together, and you don't know what you're going to get. I mean, it's just a match. There's no, you know, you don't win a Cadillac, you don't win $50,000, you don't win a title shot. It's just a match, and then it progressed from there. And then it's for the WrestleMania title, or the title shot. And then at that point, you know, there's that line for the longest time. Anything can happen in the World Wrestling Federation, but when it's for the WrestleMania title shot, not everything can happen. You know, it can happen within reason. We watch this year in and year out. There's going to be a pattern here. So Fandango is not going to win the Royal Rumble. D'Lo Brown is not going to win the Royal Rumble. And so at that point, it gives you maybe a good handful or a little bit less of viable contenders to win. And then you start investing in those viable contenders, and you're thinking about which viable contender is the best marketable guy for WrestleMania. And when the company doesn't go in that direction, then you just go, why am I watching this? This is stupid. I really think that the company for so long, I mean, can you imagine if there was Twitter back in the 80s, or if there was internet back in the 80s, and how many times they did a dusty finish with Ric Flair? That would, I think, I think we would get so frustrated with. I think the live crowd certainly did too, but I don't think that we would romanticize so much of what we loved as kids if we had the internet back then and could immediately vent about it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a different time socially. It's a different time culturally, and like you said, the people that make those decisions are gonna have to figure out the answer to that question, or else we'll be having this exact same conversation next year, which a year ago when Batista won, I would have said that there's no way that we'd be having the same conversation a year later. So we'll see where we are in a few weeks at WrestleMania. We'll see where we are a year from now. But before we close, let's go back into the history. Let's talk about our picks of the week. And let's go back into the archives, so to speak. Dan, tell us about the classic card of the week, and tell us about where in the history of wrestling archives we can find our classic card of the week.
Oh, yes. If you open up your large edition, of course, the History of Pro Wrestling Volume 1, as we were digging, it turns out this particular card occurred on page 666, but don't let that scare you. This was a WWF event from St. Louis, Missouri, October 4th, 1987, only just under 2,000 in attendance to watch a untelevised, unballyhooed edition of a Royal Rumble-type match. I'll just go down the card briefly. In the undercard, we had Nikolai Volkoff pinning Hillbilly Jim. Don Morocco beat Bob Orton Jr. The one-man gang pinned Junkyard Dog at around the four-minute mark. Davey Boy Smith and Billy Jack Haynes defeated Demolition by a DQ. Billy Jack Haynes, and this is some of the cool stuff that you get, obviously. I'm not trying to suck up to Graham, but you get kind of like, well, this guy was substituting for this guy who was in for this guy because of traffic. But Billy Jack Haynes, who was a substitute for Ricky Steamboat, who was supposed to be a substitute for Jake Roberts, defeated King Kong Bundy via countout. And Paul Orndorff defeated Rick Rude via countout. And then eventually you're building yourself up to a women's championship match where Sensational Sherry pinned Velvet McIntyre using the tights for leverage. Sherry was always cheating to win. That's just how the things were back in 87. And then finally in the Royal Rumble, the one-man gang came back and took out once again his nemesis, the Junkyard Dog, when he threw him over the top rope. They both went over the top rope, rather, at the same time at 12 minutes. Pre-match stipulation stated that the winner would earn a world title shot for the next show in St. Louis on 11-7. But one-man gang's title shot was announced during intermission, which, of course, ticked off many of the Missouri fans in attendance. But really interesting, the humble beginnings, October 1987, and it's fascinating to see like who else was in the building, who else was on the card. Basically, a lot of the guys that I think I mentioned were probably also in that Royal Rumble match. Is that correct, Graham?
Yeah, one can safely assume that.
Yeah. And not to put over my buddy too much, but that's one of the things that's really interesting about all the research and all the results that Graham and the history of WWE.com have collected over the years is you find rare gems like that. You find that, there was a Royal Rumble even before the one that Duggan won, which was even before they were on pay-per-view. So I definitely recommend everyone visit the history of WWE.com and purchase the several volumes of the History of Wrestling books. And Graham Cawthon, where can they get those wonderful books?
Well, they can get those wonderful books at thehistoryofwwe.com. We have links right there. You can find them on amazon.com. You can find them on barnesandnoble.com. Before I get into this week's YouTube link of the week, I did want to bring up, of course, I was the first Royal Rumble match, and it was at a house show, but there were several other house show Royal Rumbles. I don't know if you guys are aware of or have heard of, but in 1994, a week before the actual Rumble pay-per-view, there was one at Madison Square Garden, and Owen Hart actually won that one, so this would have been a week before he kicked Bret's leg out of his leg. And then actually later that summer, I believe, or that spring, there was one during a tour of Japan in Osaka, Japan. There was a WWF Royal Rumble. And I believe in late 96, a new babyface by the name of Rocky Maivia won a Royal Rumble at a house show. So they've experimented here and there with having these on, kind of like King of the Ring, having these on house shows and on televised events, and you can relive all those in some of our book series. But our YouTube link of the week this week is, I was actually trying to find some of those clips from those untelevised shows, but I came across something that's arguably even more interesting. Someone has put together an entire Rumble match using WWE 2K14, and all the characters are from comic books, which as a child growing up on Super Nintendo, I still cannot put my head around that you have the capability to do that. So I'm not going to tell you who wins, but I am going to tell you that Loki, not Caval, not the former WWE guy, but Loki, Thor's brother, has the Bray Wyatt spot in the match.
You know, it's funny. We were doing our planning for tonight's show, and you wanted to go to get, you know, well caffeinated, as you said, Graham. And then Brad and I were sitting there like, all right, well, we'll see you in a little bit. And Brad made this comment like, I'll just try to be productive during that time. And I was going to say it. I was going to just save it for this. I was like, how can one be productive when they're sitting here now watching comic book characters beating the tar out of one another on a video game while watching the Royal Rumble? I mean, this was, I could not look away from this thing. It is definitely worth checking out. It's a little bit late, so it's about a half hour, but it's definitely well worth it if you're going to kill some time during your day. Check out the comic book Royal Rumble.
So whenever this is posted on the Place to Be Nation, we'll have a link right there. So if you guys are listening to this on iTunes, go to placetobenation.com or placetobe.com and find it there and see how that one compares to Sunday.
Yeah, and another thing that you need to check out is our WWE Network Pick of the Week. Pick of the Week for the network this week is the 1990 Royal Rumble. If you have never gone back and watched this one, it has maybe the most rabid, excitable crowd ever for a pay-per-view. The Bushwhackers against the Rougeau brothers gets a WrestleMania-like reception in the opening match, and I'm not making that up. I'm not exaggerating it. And it's got one of the most fun rumbles of all time with that classic Hulk Hogan versus Ultimate Warrior confrontation. But there's a lot of other neat characters that you didn't really get to see interact with each other a lot. You get some Piper and Savage and some Piper Jake Roberts in there. There's a lot of interesting, fun matchups on that card and throughout the Rumble match itself. If that's a show that you have not gone back and watched in the past, you know, few years as an adult, maybe you saw it, maybe you rented the Coliseum video as a kid, but you haven't gone back and watched it, our WWE Network Pick of the Week this week is Royal Rumble 1990. Go back and watch it. It's an amazingly fun card, and as
and
Graham
it features,
alluded to, fun's what it's all about, right, Graham?
It is, and it features Jacques Rougeau's beard.
Graham, anything else we want to plug before we get out of here? The Pro Wrestling Tee Store, anything else?
You completely no-sold my Jacques Rougeau's beard line.
I try to no-sell as many references to Jacques Rougeau as possible.
I mean, that was straight up Road Warriors right there. And you're going to know-sell my Road Warriors line, too.
They weren't at the Royal Rumble 1990, Graham Cawthon. Do your history. Buy one of those books.
Well, before we get going, I do want to remind everyone, if you get a chance, check out thehistoryofwwe.com. Pick up a book. Peruse the website for hours on end, and you'll be amazed what you might learn. Also, while you're there, you can check out a link to ProWrestlingTees.com and get some of our new t-shirt lines, which are doing very well. And hope you guys enjoy. I think you will.
Absolutely. Follow us on Twitter at The History of WWE. Follow me at Stutzy. Follow our man Dan at DMACP2. be. And Dan, and if this is their first time listening, if they just found us by accident, run down all the ways that you can find our show and subscribe to it. And hey, if this is your first time listening to us, please let us know what you thought on Twitter. Please do subscribe. Dan, how can they find this and the other podcasts on the Place to Be Nation?
I will put on the radio voice. This was always the favorite part of the show for Steve Carino, so let's go with it. You can find the History of Wrestling podcast in any of the following ways: by visiting placetobenation.com and clicking on the PTBN podcast banner, or the brand new History of Wrestling podcast banner on the right hand side. In addition, just by subscribing to the Place to Be podcast feed on iTunes, you will automatically receive the latest and greatest episodes of the History of Wrestling podcast. You can also visit our friends at Stitcher.com, subscribe to the Place to Be podcast, or download the Place to Be Nation podcast app by hitting up placetobe.podbean.com/mobile on your iPhone or iPad. Be sure, of course, to follow us on Twitter. Of course, once again, it's at the History of WWE and at place2bnation. And like us on Facebook at facebook.com/placetobenation. Finally, if you have questions for our final segment, this segment, if you will, or suggestions for the show, you can hit us all up on Twitter, or you can ask us questions at the History of WWE using the hashtag HOWpodcast. Brad.
That's it for this week. We will be back next week when we will talk more about the history of wrestling, and more importantly, we will talk more about Jacques Rougeau's meter. From Montreal to Memphis, I live